The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to the HBO Boys podcast. Today we are talking about Oppenheimer. It's me, Ryan, and Adam is also here. Say hi,
I'm
Adam.
Here.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm here.
Yeah. Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer. Yay.
Yeah.
Now, something we'll let everyone know if you're not in the Discord on our Patreon, patreon.com/HBOBOIZ. We went and saw Oppenheimer in one of the 30 movie theaters in the world that are showing it in 15 perf 70 millimeter film.
And Adam, can you describe what that means for the layman?
Yeah, so that is the film format that Kodak literally invented for this movie, for Christopher Nolan specifically. It's the largest and widest 70 millimeter film that has ever been made. And obviously, film has a different color grade, it has a different texture, all that stuff. So this film was not only massive, it was beautiful and crispy, and it had wonderful rack focus and bokehs, and it was just, man,
you're making up
it
words.
Was good.
You're making up words.
It was lovely experience, and I'm very excited that the Providence Place IMAX has this. That is where we went, and it is dope.
Yeah, it was a 10:30 or 10 a.m. showing, and it was filled with people in pink because they were doing the double feature that day.
The double feature, right.
And I actually got to see Barbie and Oppenheimer on the same day, but I saw Barbie like 10:30 p.m. on the
Unreal.
Same day. And
12 hours later.
12 hours later. Kodak, by the way, also developed the first ever black and white film stock for IMAX for this movie as well, because
did not know that.
Yeah, there are kind of different timelines. We're jumping around in this movie. When it's in color, it's in first person from Oppenheimer's perspective. When it's in black and white, it is from Strauss's perspective, Robert Downey Jr.'s. We go back and forth between Oppenheimer's story from Cambridge to Los Alamos, then his security hearing in 1954, and Strauss's confirmation hearing in 1959. And I personally didn't get lost in that timeline. I went in because I, having an understanding of how Christopher Nolan really likes to take narrative structure and stretch it to its limits, I did see some people say that it was hard to follow, but I don't know. I didn't think it was that hard.
Yeah, I think once you got down and understood the color changes and the pacing, it was much easier. But if you didn't get on that, like, I get it. But I loved it. I thought it was great.
Also, by the way, because the size of IMAX 15 perf 70 millimeter film is gigantic, and the speed at which it's pulled through the camera, it's nearly impossible to record on set sound when the camera's running. So when dialogue was happening, they had to use like 5 perf 70 millimeter format rather than full frame IMAX, or you wouldn't be able to hear anybody.
And I'm trying to remember, I saw an interview where it was someone just interviewing Christopher Nolan about this movie, and they were talking about the sound and how they loved the dialogue that happens during the explosion scene. And he said, yeah, we captured that. That was the same sound that you saw is what we captured. And there was no after post-processing on sound either.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
He says no CGI shots in this entire movie, but there's also a shot of the Earth exploding. Like, it's like a daydream kind of, what if the atmosphere also explodes? And I was like, did you go to space, Chris?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe he did.
And okay, well, when you went to space, Chris, did you nuke the Earth?
Well, you know what? That no CGI, there's a little asterisk next to that, because on the Indian version of this, they did in fact put a CGI dress on Florence Pugh when she was naked, sitting in the chair with Cillian Murphy there. And it is what it is. It's their culture, I guess.
I suppose. And I thought Cillian Murphy was going to hang full dong, and he didn't.
That's what I heard.
That's what I had heard, too, through the dong-based grapevine, and it didn't happen.
No, but we did get some lewds and nudes, you know? Actually, it's surprising, but I didn't anticipate there one to be as much as there was, even though it wasn't an extended time. In a movie like this, it didn't come to my mind that we'd see anything.
A 3-hour-long movie, actually, I think like 3 hours and 5 minutes, I will also say it didn't feel that long.
No, it didn't.
It went faster than I thought it was going to go. And this is a story. How much of this story did you know going into the movie, Adam?
I knew about the situation that happened, and I knew about
the war.
Yeah, and I knew about Oppenheimer. I knew about the Manhattan Project, but I didn't know about this whole trial. Essentially, he was on. I had no idea about that.
Right, where during the 1950s, the McCarthy era, and the rise of anti-communism in America, slapping Oppenheimer with a communist label and trying to renounce his security clearance, and succeeding in doing so in sort of a kangaroo court where he was never meant to win, and a court that wasn't even a court. It was just sort of a room where his old friends testified against him or for him while he's sitting there. And when he's testifying, his wife is behind him, which is a bummer, especially when he's just like, and I met up with Florence Pugh and we were naked and I should have hung dong, but I didn't.
I should have done it. I mean, I did it off screen.
Right. Okay. So I don't think we go over the entirety of the plot here.
I think people at this point now, if they're interested in the movie, understand what it's about. Right.
You can go read American Prometheus, the book that this movie is based off of. Here's what's your review of the movie, Adam? Now with some time and put in between you watching it and now getting here.
Yeah, so I definitely want to go see it again. I think much like Interstellar and Inception, things like that, other Christopher Nolan, you know, gigantic movies, seeing it a second time, you're going to pick up on things that you missed, right? This movie was just chock full of information, jargon. I had no idea what some of the things they were talking about were. But at face value, the movie was expertly created from an artistic standpoint. I think the story was incredibly compelling. Like you said, it didn't feel like it took 3 hours and 5 minutes or whatever it was. It kept you on the edge of your seat. The tension buildups to each crescendo were amazing and very fulfilling when they came to fruition. And I very much enjoy this movie. But like I said, I want to see it again to really take in the pieces that I didn't understand, and like it just kind of brushed off because the next thing was starting to come quicker. But yeah, I loved the movie. Absolutely loved it. And I'm psyched we got to see it in its full format.
I agree 100%. Yeah, we're both not theoretical physicists, so some of the stuff is going to go over our heads. I think the best way to recap/gush about this movie is to just go over the cast, because
oh my God, it's unbelievable.
It's unreal. I'm just going to work my way up from the bottom of the IMDb. Okay. The first one is Gary Oldman as Harry Truman.
Unreal. Like, you leaned over, you're like, is that Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman?
He fucking is.
He's on screen for 2 minutes. He says something mean to Oppenheimer. Get that crybaby out of the Oval Office. Don't let him ever back here again.
Yeah.
It's funny because Gary Oldman also played Winston Churchill in the recent past. So him coming back as Harry Truman now on both sides of the war, I think was very, very interesting. And I'm not going to keep saying he or she or they did a great job because it's going to get old, but he did.
Save it for the few that really deserve it.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, Casey Affleck, also on screen for like 4 minutes as Boris Pash.
I can't stop. He was so great.
He's so great. This is going to be a bad podcast.
It's okay.
It's going to be 20 minutes of name too. So good.
So good. I mean, he was kind of a blind. Like, I didn't expect him to be in it. I didn't know he was going to be in it. But he was also like, you could tell the character they were trying to paint for him was evil and bad. And like, he just has that freaking look about him. And yeah, so good.
Olivia Thirlby of Juno and Jed fame or Jed Dread fame. Also in there, Rami Malek on screen for about 5 minutes as well. And especially at the end when he's testifying against Strauss, playing a character named David Hill. I have a tough time seeing Rami Malek and not thinking that's Rami Malek.
That's Freddie Mercury.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, he wasn't on screen very long, but his lines on screen were like the biggest, like, oh shit, fuck you moment of the whole movie.
Benny Safdie, the one of the co-directors of Uncut Gems and Good Time, also Uncut an actor. Gems. Yeah, played Edward Teller in the movie. He was really good. He was the guy that Emily Blunt doesn't shake his hand at the scene where Oppenheimer is getting an award.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hold on, one moment. Write down what number or what numbers we're at, because Sam's calling me.
11:34.
Hello? Hi. We're still recording. Oh, I texted you that we were doing it. You didn't read that? You didn't read it? All right. Right. All right. Bye. Apologies for you having to edit that.
It's quite okay.
Jack Quaid plays Richard Feynman. He's the guy playing the bongos all the time. He's also one of the first in the first photos I saw of the movie was him and Cillian Murphy's Oppenheimer walking through like Harvard Square or something.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is he related to Randy Quaid?
Processing. IMDBing.
Enhance.
Yep. Yes.
Is he really?
Yeah. Randy Quaid's his uncle.
Oh, wow. All right.
His father is Dennis Quaid and his mother is Meg Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well.
Sure. He's in The Boys. He's great. Josh Peck as Kenneth Bainbridge, the guy with his hand over the button being like, don't fucking press this button. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Josh Peck was such a weird cast for that, but I don't hate it. Like, it was just when I saw him on screen, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Josh Peck, he's here.
Yeah, he's here.
Matt Damon. I mean,
must have been psyched for him.
As Leslie Groves. Matt Damon, I think, also gets that same Rami Malek treatment a little bit, where like everyone's like, that's Matt Damon. But
yep.
I thought he was great in this movie. He was a good comic relief. He had the story in the pressers talking about him being on an extended vacation and having a conversation with his wife where he was like, okay, I'm not going to do anything for this extended period of time. Except, and this is one caveat, if Chris Nolan calls, that's the only way I'm doing. And then he called.
Yeah. And, you know, as I'm scrolling through the TikToks and the Instagrams, I'm seeing all these interviews of Oppenheimer, obviously, you know, because my phone is listening to me and knows I went and saw it.
Sure.
There was one that I came across where it was him and Emily Blunt. And he said, you know, it was 25 years ago where I played a private in Saving Private Ryan. And Emily Blunt was like, Jesus Christ, it was 75 or it was 25 years ago. God damn it. We're
75 years ago.
It was 25 year old. And he was like, yeah,
I am old. Matthew Modine of Stranger Things, also in there somewhere. Florence Pugh, Jean Tatlock. I do like the scene where she suicides, question mark. There were like an extra pair of hands in there to let the historical context through of we don't know if she suicided or if she was murdered. But she was great in the movie. A wonderful foil to Cillian Murphy. And I think one of the greatest actors of her generation.
Yeah, she's really great. And I mean, every scene that she was in, she kind of stole it. Not the fact that she was naked, but sure. She is invested in it. And you can tell that she, just wrapped up in this role, she's so great. And
yeah,
the way she delivers the line, her emotions that come through, very, very good.
There are a few scene stealers out of a cast of 20 actual huge actors, a few scene stealers, and she is at the forefront of them. Mm. I think of it in the same way as Michael Cera in Barbie, which because every time he's on screen is like, God damn it, he is owning this right now.
Oh yeah, that was so good.
And by the way, I think it's important to note here, we didn't talk about it, but the Barbenheimer effect, the counter content effect, where they put these on the same day, and then it sort of became a cultural phenomenon to they'll never be separated, right?
No, nope, never again. Honestly, probably good.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. Barbie is making a crap load of money, and Oppenheimer is making way more than a biopic should.
Right. And I just love the people that we saw at the theater when we went and saw Oppenheimer, the half shirts that said Oppenheimer on one half and Barbie on the other, gray and pink, and everyone was dressed up. Like, it felt like when we were younger going to the movies. It was great.
Josh Hartnett as Ernest Lawrence. Josh Hartnett was great in this movie.
He was so good. And when I saw him on screen, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I didn't put it together at first that was Josh Hartnett, the same guy that played in Pearl Harbor, and he's finally getting his revenge for his buddy.
Exactly. Yes. And I had just seen him in a Black Mirror episode because he was in one with Aaron Paul. Did you know that he turned down the role of Batman that Christian Bale would eventually get?
Really?
Yeah, I just learned that.
I didn't know that.
David Krumholtz as Isidore Rabi. David Krumholtz is transformed in this role. He is completely taking it on, and he was great. Kenneth Branagh,
Bernard.
Let's skip over Kenneth Branagh, who is an amazing actor and director. He is David Krumholtz, that is Bernard in the Santa Claus, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
We then have Jason Clarke as Roger Robb. And remember that these are all real people they're playing, right?
I know. Ruthless, this guy.
There are transcripts that sometimes just becomes the dialogue. And this guy's job was to discredit Oppenheimer, and he did a very good one. And Jason Clarke, I know him best from Lawless. He was also... I hated him, so they did a good job.
He also was in... He was also in something else. Oh my God. Let me navigate to his IMDb.
Zero Dark 30, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Maybe it was that. I remember seeing him in something. Oh God, I can't think of it. Oh no, in Terminator. He was John Connor in the Terminator reboot.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
And we're now getting up to the top here. Alden Ehrenreich. As the Senate aide. Guy didn't even get a name, but he was amazing in this movie. He's the guy...
the Senate aide?
Yeah, they didn't give him a name, but he's the guy who gets to just tell off Robert Downey Jr.'s Louis Strauss at the end. Yeah. I don't know, the truth will happen, you fucking dick.
Yeah, that was a great where he waited to open the door. Oof, truth bomb.
Truth bomb. Amazing.
And I'm glad that he busted out of the Han Solo detriment and brought it back with this one.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We're now getting to the top of this order. Robert Downey Jr. as Louis Strauss will most likely, if he doesn't win, Best Supporting Actor.
He was great.
It's going to be tough, man. Because he ruled in this. Because after playing Tony Stark for so long, the guy with all the quips, the guy with all the punchlines, he then plays this character that has no punchlines. He is just manipulating and quote unquote serving his country. And right up until the very end, I didn't think he was going to get called out in front of everybody and sort of have a downfall, but he does, which is which is a testament to me not knowing the history, one, and two, the movie selling me something and then turning me on my own head. To be like, oh, twist, M. Night Shyamalan, ding dong, right on.
Yeah, and, you know, he is just, I just, when I think back at the scenes that he was in, I mean, he, like you said, he sold it. He's manipulative. But I mean, we knew that Robert Downey Jr. was a great dramatic actor. I think of immediately the movie, The Judge.
Oh, so good, man. Yeah,
that I saw on our way back home from Barcelona.
Yes, we both watched it on the plane ride.
That was the first time I saw it.
And I looked over to you, I was like, this movie's fucking good.
This movie's great. It's so good and heartfelt, and he plays like a very serious role. And yeah, just excellent, excellent. I'm just so, so happy that he can break through the stigma of being Tony Stark. And I mean, he is Tony Stark. He is. But like, it was such a separation. Like, this was an actor I saw on screen, and I didn't say, hey, that's Tony Stark. You know?
Right.
I said, this is Robert Downey Jr. playing a role in this movie. Like, I was able to separate it.
I mean, him walking towards Einstein and Oppenheimer, thinking they're talking about him.
Right.
And then it turns out that that's not the case at all. By the way, Tom Conti as Albert Einstein, absolutely incredible.
Yep.
It's, you know, you ask any normal, like, average intelligence American when Einstein lived, they probably say the 1700s or 1800s. Like, it's
right.
People forget that he was alive recently, man.
Yeah, right.
Him and Pablo Picasso, so recent.
It's wild to think about, because I forget about it too.
I'm going to skip over Emily Blunt because we're going to get back to her. Because
yeah, for sure.
Talking about Emily Blunt, I think you have to put it in the context of first talking about the foundation of this movie, which is Cillian Murphy. Obviously, in the Batman movies, has been headlining Peaky Blinders for the last like decade, and that just ended. Cillian Murphy's J. Robert Oppenheimer, again, it's kind of exactly like I said to Robert Downey Jr., like, should, unless something incredible happens, win Best Actor for this role.
Sure. Yeah, I can see it.
In a movie that is 3 hours and 5 minutes long, where the script, at least when it's in color, is written in the first person, and that first person perspective is his. If he doesn't bring it every second he's on screen, this movie doesn't work, and he does. I will always remember him in the scene where he is talking to the gym of people and the white flashing light is happening and they're all radiated and getting deaded. And he's just like, this is bad.
Oh, man, this is bad. Yeah, I mean, and his dedication to the craft of being this actor is, you know, he lost a shit ton of weight for this role. Even the actors are saying, yeah, he never ate dinner with us. Again, I'm reading.
Well, he's a method actor.
I know he is.
Dumb, but
you know what, though? It seems to be pretty great.
Yes,
when for the people who do it.
When it works, people are like, well, I guess it worked, so let him be Robert Oppenheimer on set.
I've been seeing the you know, interviews of him at, you know, after obviously everything's wrapped and the movie's out, and you know, he's definitely a healthier weight, but like, he wouldn't have looked like Oppenheimer had he not lost all that weight. Because you look at pictures of real Oppenheimer and him, and it was such a great cast, too. They have such similar attributes, physical attributes that make him look like him, and his mannerisms, just very, very good.
And I think, like, okay, I'm about to talk about Emily Blunt, and I'm about to call it the performance of the movie. I'm about to call it, like, one of the best performances of the decade. I'm about to, like, piñatas and confetti from the ceiling, the way I'm about to talk about Emily Blunt's performance. And
let's just say you ain't wrong.
No, I don't think I am, but I think that performance can't be what it is unless Cillian Murphy didn't just murder being J. Robert Oppenheimer. And I think it will get, like, lost in the sauce a little bit. how good he was. It's the same sort of thing we'll talk about with Margot Robbie when we talk about Barbie, because I think that's going to get lost in the sauce, how amazing she is carrying that entire movie, because the characters around her are allowed to flourish, are allowed to be the fullest version that they can be, because the rock at the center of the movie is so strong. And I think is also cool in the Barbenheimer phenomenon, which is like two amazing lead performances that I think over the years will be forgotten. And I think that supporting performances will kind of live on farther than the main people. But Emily Blunt's performance.
I could see that happening. But I don't know, man. I think the Cillian Murphy one, I think this is such so much of a mega movie, and he's on screen for so long and he's so good that I don't know that he will get lost. I could see it happening with Margot Robbie and Barbie, because that cast was stacked as well. I mean, and there was a heck of a lot more screen time for a lot of those actors. So, yeah, we'll see.
By the way, we'll be talking about Barbie next week on this podcast, so come back for that. Emily Blunt, Edge of Tomorrow is one of my favorite movies. She is I love that movie. She's also in The Devil Wears Prada, and she's Mary Gosh Dang Poppins, and she's amazing in The Quiet Place, in real life, married to Jack Ryan, I mean, John Krasinski. And she, I never gave her enough credit. I don't know if you're like me.
No, I absolutely same. I remember seeing her. The first time I ever recognized who she really was The Devil Wears Prada. And then I remember she came up again in like The Adjustment Bureau or something. And the other one was Christ Almighty, Looper.
She played Christ?
She played Christ in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yes, dude. I love the Dreamcoat, and it's amazing.
Andrew Lloyd Webber, baby. Anyway, go
she's on. One of the most talented people on earth.
Yeah, like, she's showing her stride here.
Oh my God, when she would not shake Benny Safdie's hand
At just the end?
The look that she gave.
Because she called it out. She said, these people are going to forgive you and pretend like you're the hero.
Albert Einstein said that, and then she lived that shit, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
she stood by her man who cheated on her, and she knew about it. And But she's still here.
He was in a dark place, Ryan.
Doesn't matter. No excuses. She's still standing. She's still strong playing Kitty Oppenheimer. Bring in the sheets, Kitty. God damn it. Out of all of these performances, if Emily Blunt doesn't win, that's the biggest travesty.
Best supporting actress or best lead actress?
Lead. It depends on what they put her in for. Because I think they'll put up Florence Pugh for best supporting actress.
That's true.
She absolutely has a chance to win that as well. The year is long and full of movies. So we will most likely be having this conversation throughout the year, but we are going to be putting up in the drama category all performances against Cillian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Robert Downey Jr., and Florence Pugh, and we'll see how it goes. And, you know, maybe we get a you didn't ever see Brandon Fraser's The Whale coming last year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that just, it came out of nowhere, and of course won. So maybe there is one of those things that is in the works for this year. But if not, just give Oppenheimer the awards.
Yeah. I mean, The Whale was an interesting one because, you know, Brendan Fraser's so wildly loved, and it was his kind of comeback movie. And then when that all that press started happening for him and he was doing interviews, people realized that, oh, wow, he's actually back. Maybe we should check out this movie. And then it exploded so quickly. I remember hearing about it.
You get it? Oh, yeah. Like the bomb over here. Hiroshima and Nagasaki killing all those goddamn people.
Oof.
Messed up. Pretty messed up. Pretty messed up.
Our government totally sucks, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
Government totally sucks.
Thank you, Tenacious D, for the truth.
But yeah, so The Whale, I didn't see coming. A lot of people didn't know about that movie until after it came out. You know, people started kind of recognizing it. And yeah, it was massive, no pun intended. And it was such a great movie.
Hey, is Christopher Nolan the most accomplished director of this generation?
I mean, I would make an argument. Well, here, let's do this. Let's do this. Ready? We're going to do this.
I'm ready. What are we doing?
Just give me 2 seconds.
Okay.
I need to pull it up. Hold on.
Okay. Then stall better. Okay. I don't know.
All right. Ready?
I'm ready, I guess.
Memento.
Sure.
Batman Begins.
All the Batman. The Dark Knight.
Dark Knight.
The Dark
Inception.
Knight.
Dark Knight Rises. Interstellar. Dunkirk. Tenet. Oppenheimer. I would say yeah.
Yeah. By the way, like Dunkirk doesn't get the love it should. We saw that in IMAX when it came out.
Yeah. We saw that one in IMAX. And that was a wonderful movie in IMAX. Scary as hell.
It's so loud. That's why IMAX is the best, because it's so gosh dang loud.
It's so loud and huge. And like next time when there's a movie coming out in IMAX that we must see, we need to know this sooner so we can buy tickets more towards the back.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I like Matt Damon said, I will not do anything, but if Chris calls, I'm leaving, babe. Later.
Ugh, I know.
Later,
and
dude.
Like he always just partners with like some of the best sound designers and set designers, and he's got an amazing DP, and just it's just so good.
Music.
Oh,
Ludwig Göransson, a producer for Childish Gambino, The Mandalorian, composer of, is probably the like coming into his own as the most accomplished composer of today. And there were no drums in the 3 hours and 5 minutes the entire time.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
I
point.
Didn't realize it until I read it.
Oh my God.
It's so sick.
Yeah, and it played on that this, so it felt like, and it was very intentionally, and it worked really well for this. It felt repetitive. I mean, you know, and that's good for this type of movie with its pacing, but it was the same music that they used in the first trailer that was released. And I remember saying like, dang, like that's such a beautiful score. And it fits the mood so well, and they just ran with it and did different variations of it. Man, yeah, I'm going to listen to that soundtrack for sure.
As we wrap up, what are the scenes from this movie that will live on with you?
So one of my favorite things, and honestly, I wasn't prepared for it, was the scene when the Trinity test actually exploded.
Yeah, the
and
silence.
I was prepared. It's IMAX. I'm prepared for the loudest of booms.
Right, I was clenched.
Yeah. Yeah. And then bright light, bright, 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 bright light. And IMAX is also much brighter than standard definition.
Yeah.
Bright light and just silence for a good minute and a half, cutting between the visuals of people experiencing the bright light, seeing the flash, then turning around and looking at it. The close-up shots of their glasses, the welder's glasses, and it was complete silence. I mean, you could hear a goddamn pin drop in our theater. And it was just such an awesome decision to choose to do that scene like that. And then they brought it in at the end of that scene with the huge explosion and the shockwave of the aftermath of it. And it was just, it was so good.
I'll remember when Oppenheimer and Matt Damon's character are having the conversation about like the close to nil chance that the chain reaction will light the atmosphere on fire and they'll destroy the world.
Great,
and he's like, well, what would you rather have? And Matt Damon's like, zero.
Zero.
I'd rather have zero.
There was a lot of, I mean, it was kind of a funny movie in some regards. Like there were some funny scenes that were like laugh out loud funny. You know, just kind of the situation that they were in, and they were making light of it, and just how heavy things ended up being was a cool dynamic.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. Anyway, do I have to keep reading while we bang or?
That's right.
I did not think that was going to happen during the banging.
Yeah, and neither did I. And there was a couple of, I guess, Hinduist groups that are shunning Christopher Nolan and asking for that scene to actually be removed from the movie.
Dude, whatever, dude. I don't care about your feelings. Oh, the thing in the movie made me feel a way I don't like.
Yeah.
Don't fucking watch it.
That's like saying, like, that's not your opinion. Well, good thing about opinions is everyone has them and it doesn't matter. Or I'm offended. Oh, I'm sorry you're offended. I'm sorry you're offended. We're not.
Yeah, you don't have to watch
it. Yeah.
What? The zeitgeist has changed in a way because this movie, it is that. I don't care. It's all just fluff. It's all just clickbaity bullshit. It's all just things that old people are screaming at a TV while watching the news for them to be angry about. And also, like, I don't care. Anyway,
Also, one more thing on Ludwig Göransson, if you didn't say it. He did Black Panther.
Yes.
Which, did you say Black Panther?
Nah, but that
did, yo, that score one was ripped. So good. It was so good.
Anyway, we loved this movie. And yeah. This was a 40-minute gush just talking about how we feel about it. Thank you for being around for that. Like I said, we're going to be doing Barbie next week, so come back for that. If you want more stuff from us, it's $1 a month at patreon.com/HBOBOYZ. You get a bunch more podcasts, and also you get to join the private Discord, where you get to talk to us all day and tell us the things you want to hear. I really appreciate all of you still being around. Oh, by the way, now on Patreon, a super secret Patreon-only exclusive series that I can't put on the main channel because it would get me in trouble.
Oh, no.
That's a teaser right there.
That is a great teaser. But thank you to our patrons, Sunshine, Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, James Watch My Donk, Chris Wood, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, and Carol Andreas. Thank you so much for your subscriptions, rather, not submissions. That's weird. And please follow us on the TikTok at the HBO Boys, the HBO Boys Instagram at the HBO Boys, and Threads at the HBO Boys.
You're doing it.
Periodically post things. Please follow, subscribe, like, all that great stuff.
When they've punished you enough, they'll serve you salmon and potato salad, make speeches, give you a medal, and pat you in the back, telling all is forgiven. Just remember, it won't be for you. It would be for them. Albert Einstein.
Those bastards. Yeah. Ugh, God, it was so good.
Yeah.